Tonight is Sunday, the 30th day of May, 2004, and the Sunday night speakers meeting of Narcotics Anonymous welcomes our first speaker, Steve.
I'm Stephen, I'm an addict.
Hi, Steve.
And it's an honor and a pleasure to speak at the meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. I'd like to thank Jim for asking me to speak. You know, I wasn't sure how much traffic there was going to be down here tonight. I live in Hollywood, so I drove down Santa Monica and then down Wilshire. And traffic was real light, which was a nice pleasant surprise. So when I was going by the Veterans Cemetery, I pulled in because that's where my father was buried, and he died over 20 years ago, and he died when I was at the depths of my active addiction. You know, he was at the end of his life in very bad physical condition, having to take a lot of medicines prescribed for pain and other stuff. And he and my mother let me move back into their place, you know? I mean, I was in my late 20s. I had blown everything I had, every chance I had. You know, I was in my late 20s living with mom and dad, and they let me live there. And the stuff that I did to them, you know, in the depths of my disease was terrible. You know, it's what a lot of us have done, probably, to the people that have tried to help us whom we were actively using. And so, you know, I got to stand there at his grave, and there are all the little flags there in the Veterans Cemetery because Memorial Day, and I was like, a real nice setting, you know, and I just said kind of communed with the spirit or whatever, and tried to get myself at peace, and I did, you know. I know my sponsor many years ago suggested, well, there's no way you can really make amends to your parents because they're no longer with you, but what you can do is make amends to other people that are still around you. So I have, you know, an elderly aunt and uncle, and I've tried to be real loving to them. I've been a big part of their life. I go down there for their birthday celebrations and things like that, even though, you know, I don't always want to. I'd rather, you know, stay at home and hang with my friends and my 85-year-old aunt and uncle, but it's a way that I can, you know, make some amends. So it felt real good to do that. And you know, I try and stop by there like at least once a year or so when I'm traveling through the down Wilshire Boulevard. I grew up in Los Angeles, grew up in Hollywood, and some of my earliest memories are of feeling less than, different than, and not a part of. And now when I look back with some clarity, none of those feelings were really valid. You know, I was accepted by my playmates. I did okay at whatever I attempted. You know, I wasn't a straight A student, but I got by, and I had friends. But my head told me otherwise. And I think that's something that happens to a lot of us, you know, that suffer from the disease of addiction when we're in the disease, even before we start using drugs, you know, is our head tells us something other than what is actually the truth. And those were feelings that I felt strongly. I also was intensely shy. And the first time I got loaded, I guess I was 12 years old, you know, and I got drunk and it took that shyness away, and I suddenly was able to flirt with the girls, and I felt like one of the guys, and you know, I could slap the guys on the back, and you know, it took away all that shyness and feeling of less than and different than. And right then and there, I thought that I had found the key to life, and that was by changing the way I felt on the inside, by introducing something into me, a chemical into me. And you know, I continued to believe that for the next 23 years. I continued to believe that in spite of all of the best evidence that told me otherwise. And I continued to really believe that even after I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, early on in my using, by the time I was 15, I was like, the first thing I do when I get out of bed in the morning, would be take a hit off a bong that had already been loaded the night before, because that would, like, you know, it's gonna, like, take too much time if I had to, like, spend 90 seconds, you know. And that was before I'd even go in the bathroom and take a piss or anything. So, you know, by that age, it was like the first thing I had to do is introduce a chemical to me to put a buffer between me and life. And, you know, it worked, and it worked for a lot of years. Later on, you know, in, like, college and stuff like that, I wasn't the guy who was passed out in the bathroom throwing up. I wasn't the guy that crashed the cars. I wasn't the one that got arrested. I wanted to get just loaded enough to kind of take that feelings that I didn't want to feel away, you know, of shyness and insecurity and problems with self-esteem. And you know, I knew my limits, and I rarely exceeded them. Occasionally I would, but, you know, I mean, I never had the sort of repercussions that my friends did from using. So at an early age, you know, I had a friend that died in his senior year of high school, crashed his car on Quaaludes, and was like, you know, I was able to say, now that he had a drug problem, you know. And in the meantime, I was using drugs every day from the time I got up in the morning until I went to bed. And, you know, that had become my life, and I was functional for a lot of years. You know, I went to college, I went into business, and I went into business and sales, and, you know, I really didn't have a lot of self-confidence and self-esteem, and sales really takes those things. So my, like, drug use increased dramatically, and by that time I had been introduced to pharmaceutical drugs too, that you could get from a doctor, you know, just go in and say, hey, I'm a little bit nervous, and they'd write you a prescription, and so that became part of my daily life. And, you know, for a lot of years I made a distinction from between the two. You know, if something came from a doctor with a prescription that he said you needed, you know, my head told me those weren't drugs, that was medicine. And, you know, the fact that by within a few years from that, I was taking much more than you were supposed to be taking, and much more than was therapeutically prescribed. You know, my head told me, well, my feelings were much more intense than the normal people's feelings. I felt these intense feelings of shyness and low self-esteem, so I needed to take three times as much as you. And, you know, if you had asked me right then, I was still taking, like, medicine. I wasn't using. But then on top of it, I was using. But I managed to, like, separate those, you know. I used, and then I took medicine. But, you know, I managed to actually have a life. I was, like, you know, successful at what I did, and managed to kind of, like, keep it together. And especially if you looked at me from the outside, it was, like, kind of the glue that held everything together. But, you know, the drugs could barely contain the feelings. You know, I still felt this incredible emptiness, a lot of self-loathing, a lot of, you know, still feeling shy in certain situations, and the drugs didn't always work. And you know, then I did what a lot of us start to do. I started looking for other fixes, you know, something outside of myself that would make me feel better. And I did that even before I started using. You know, I can remember being 8 or 10 years old, and I was into like fireworks, like probably a lot of males are, you know. And I would have this fireworks collection, and I would take them out and lay them on my bed and put a pile of like 20 M80s here and 30 cherry bombs here and my bricks of firecrackers, and I would just stare at them and like, whoa, I got a really good collection. I guess I can feel okay about me, you know. And you know, as addicts, we have to be careful still that we don't look outside of ourselves to like fixes like that. And I have in recovery. And sometimes, you know, the easiest thing for me to do is go buy something that is a nice, shiny, fun new toy, and it will, you know, make me feel better for a day or two. And but at least today I have the awareness that that's what I'm doing when I go and do it, instead of being like blind and you know, driven by these things. You know, eventually I was no longer able to control my drug use, and I lost the job, and I lost all those things that I thought were important to me. And you know, I started the a 10-year bottom, you know, that involved going in and out of recovery houses, going in and out of mental hospitals. Not too much time in jail, you know. I was one of those people that wasn't arrested much, couldn't spend much time in jail. And you know, I started doing geographics. I figured that I was miserable, and the reason that I was miserable was because I was living in the middle of Los Angeles, and it's a big, ugly city with billboards, and I was living like in Hollywood, and, you know, people are turning tricks on the corner and people pushing shopping baskets. So I figured, well, I need to move out of Los Angeles. So I moved up to Sonoma County, and I got a little cabin that you couldn't even see the nearest neighbor. It was like 100 yards away, and there were deer in the yard, and there were quail, and there were eagles, and it was on the edge of a national forest. And, you know, for about 3 days it worked, and I felt great. And then, like, you know, the same feelings just came back, and I was fucking miserable, you know, and I didn't have a clue that it could be my drug use, and it could be that I've just been living this, you know, lie that involved trying to change my feelings by using drugs for so many years. I didn't have a clue, you know, so I figured that the reason I was so miserable that it was because I was living in the United States, and it was a capitalistic Western society, and it was during the Reagan years, and I felt alienated, so I moved to Central America, to like a mountain town in the mountains of Guatemala, where I didn't have TV and radio, you know, I thought that that would fix me, and it didn't, you know, and I lived there for a couple years, and my, you know, I thought that I would probably be able to get away from the certain drugs that I was using really heavily, because by that time I had a little bit of introduction to the program, and what I grasped from the program was that I had a problem with a couple certain drugs and the way that I did them, and if I could avoid those two drugs and actually mainly the way that I did them, that I would be okay. So I moved down there, and I found that those drugs were there too, you know, and you know, hit a bottom there, and I came back to Los Angeles, and once again I was living in Hollywood, went into a recovery house, came out of the recovery house, and you know, got a little apartment, and I thought that I was doing okay because I was avoiding those two particular drugs. And if you asked me, I was clean. You know, I was taking a handful of pills a day that were prescribed by doctors, so those were medicine. I was drinking on top of it. I was completely miserable, but if you asked me, I was working a program because I was avoiding, you know, my two drugs of choice and the ones that had caused the real, like, financial devastation and wreaked havoc in my life. But, you know, if you're an addict like me, that doesn't work, and you'll go back to your drug of choice, and one more time I did. And, this, you know, the last time, which was this was back in 1989, you know, our disease progresses, and I, instead of just stopping when, you know, I ran out of money and stuff to sell it, like, my disease continued on to the point where there was no gas or electricity in my place because it was shut off. I was getting evicted. Anything that could be traded or sold was gone. And I was letting the street people use my place along with male and female prostitutes as long as they would kick me down. You could do anything you wanted in my apartment as long as you would take care of me, you know. And people would actually push shopping carts up in front of the building, you know, and come up and get high in my place. And like the manager is like, you know, the year before I was like, she thought I had my shit together. And like, you know, three or four people would push these shopping carts full of cans up and like trundle up to my apartment, come out a couple hours later. I'm like, oh God, you know, and that's what my life had become, you know. And you know, I ended up standing around a fire in a trash can at MacArthur Park. I used to just go down there for, you know, 12 or 24 hours, and when the money ran out and the scams ran out, would come back home. But for some reason, you know, it ended up where I spent like 3 days down there, you know, just like sitting on a park bench, you know, and actually like begging people for a hit, you know. And I can remember when I used to go down there a year earlier and people would come up to me and beg me for a hit. I would say, look at those people. They are really drug addicts, you know. I got my shit together. That's how we can justify in our mind. You know, I would have to take the bus down to MacArthur Park because my car had been impounded. But yet I would sit on a bench and these people would come up to me and beg me for a hit. And I would say, those people, they're addicts. I'm just partying a little bit too hard, and, you know, I'm going to get my shit together one of these days. And, you know, I had that moment of clarity standing around that trash can fire. It was like, you know, I got to see where my life had progressed, how it had not progressed, it had fallen apart in the previous, like, 10 years. And, you know, I walked home and walked home to that apartment that I was getting evicted from, and that there was no electricity and no gas. And I was intending to kill myself because I had come around this program and I had been to meetings and I had been in recovery houses, and I was convinced, you know, it could work for you people, but it couldn't work for me because I used differently than you. My feelings were more intense than all of you. You know, I used prescription drugs on top of all my recreational drugs, and I felt that I needed those because, you know, I just had these intense feelings that none of you all felt, you know. You know, so I sat there for 3 days, and, you know, I couldn't kill myself, and I started going to meetings. I would walk down to the noon meeting at Fountain and Fairfax in Hollywood, and I didn't get clean right away, and a lot of us don't, you know, and if you're having trouble getting clean, you know, just do what I did, was just come to meetings no matter what, you know. And it ended up that, you know, I started to get some days clean and some months clean. And I was completely miserable. I was probably more miserable than I'd ever been in my life, even though I was clean, because I no longer had any kind of drugs to take the feelings away. And I didn't know what to do, you know. And a lot of it would come out as like just intense rage and hatred. You know, I would sit in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, and I would have two or three people that I knew. How much more time do I have? I didn't look at that.
About 10 minutes.
Okay. I didn't, you know, I had a few friends that I hang out with. Okay. And, but I would sit in a meeting and just virtually hate every person in the room just because you were taking up the same space that I was. And, I didn't know why, you know, and I started to get some insight from my sponsor, and you know, he said that what it is really self-hatred, you know, and the only way that you can try and bolster up your self-hatred is by hating everyone else around you, and then you can push yourself up a little bit further just by mentally assassinating everyone else around you. It gives you some kind of relief. And, you know, I started to get these sorts of insights from him, and I started working the steps, and I started doing some of the things that were suggested around here, and some of it was an absolute, like a light going off, and just like something that I'd never even thought of in my life. Like, you know, I was miserable and pissed off and angry, and I felt sorry for myself most of the time early in recovery. So I asked him, well, what can I do to, you know, get rid of these feelings? And he would say, I want you to go up to the newest person in the room and, you know, ask him, give him your phone number and go give him a hug and, you know, ask him if they need a ride home or something like that. And that was a completely foreign concept to me, you know. If you had asked me in my using what makes you happy, what would make me happy was like, you know, something fun to do or something that I wanted, or sex, or a good meal, or something. But the idea of possibly helping someone else and caring about someone else would never even entered into my realm of thinking that could be something that could actually make me feel better. The way I thought is like, if I'm going to waste time on someone else, it's not going to, like, you know, get me laid or, you know, get me high. It's like, it was a foreign concept, and you know what? what I did was, I did what was suggested, you know. I helped someone that even though I thought I had nothing to offer, I went up to someone that had a couple days clean, and I can remember them thanking me because they said that they're absolutely petrified. And I shared that that's how I had felt and still felt that, you know, that time at 6 months or 9 months clean or whatever. And I think took them out for a cup of coffee and a, you know, 99-cent Big Mac. And it was like, you know, I'd taken this person to Disneyland or something. They were just absolutely thrilled. And, you know, I mean, it made me feel so good to just, like, you know, be able to help someone and do something that was so simple and it required so little of me, and it could have such a reaction on them. So, you know, I started doing these things that were suggested to me, and I've continued to do them, you know, for 14 years now, and they've continued to work. This is a remarkable program, and, you know, I just continue to do the things that are suggested. And a real hard part for me was finding a higher power, because I came into this program like a stone-cold atheist, you know. And today I still search for a higher power, you know. I've gone through like five or six higher powers in 14 years, you know, kind of embracing different concepts and different belief systems. And, you know, but I continue to remain open-minded, which I think is important, and I continue to do the work around here. And, you know, the blessings of this program are just absolutely amazing. I can look around this room, and there are people that I've seen for 10 years and people that I consider close friends, and, you know, people that are an integral part of my life, you know. And I didn't have people that are an integral part of my life when I was using. You were there for a reason. You could get me high, or I could have sex with you, or you could give me a ride or something like that. And now I have friendships that are based on nothing more than the bond that we have in recovery, and, you know, that we're walking this this shared path. And it feels absolutely amazing, you know. The reason I started using was to feel comfortable in my own skin, you know. And that's the reason I continued to use for 23 years. And I was convinced, you know, when I first took that drink at 12 years old, that I was going to need a chemical in my system at all times to feel any kind of comfort in my own skin, even to the level that I could function, you know, and feel okay. And I actually believe that when I got here, you know, that I was different than you and than you all, that, you know, I felt these feelings more intensely. And maybe it was possible for you, but not for me. And I was pretty unhappy for my first couple of years. But, you know, maybe that's what inspired me to really, you know, work the steps and do some of the stuff that was suggested around here. And I started to get that relief, you know, and I started to actually enjoy life, you know. And I can't ever remember enjoying life, you know. I can remember being happy on my birthday or Christmas when I'd get a present or something, but it wasn't like even before I was using that, you know, I loved life and enjoyed it. And, you know, today, there are days when I wake up in the morning and it's like, boy, another day's here. I've got this great stuff to do, and, like, I love life. And that was completely unlike all my using. You know, at the end of my using, when I would come to in the morning, it was like a curse. And, you know, I had actually prayed sometimes that I would have a heart attack or something like that and just not have to go through another day of misery. And, you know, today is totally unlike that. And that's 100% due to this program and working the steps and staying around here. Well, I'm going to have to end early. That's pretty much the way it's worked for me. You know, it's like I've had this amazing change that I didn't even think would happen, and I didn't even count on it happening. And in a lot of ways, I didn't even want it to happen, you know. Oh, well, a little bit since when I came to the program, you know, I wasn't an honest person. I was into, like, white-collar crime and you know, cheating and lying and stealing and getting over on you. And I considered that anybody who worked, like, in an eight-hour job a day and was honest was, like, a lop and a lame and a square, you know, and that You were a sucker if you like went to an office and sat there for 8 hours a day and didn't steal something or, you know, didn't do some kind of scam. And, you know, that's the way I lived and that's what I believed. And, you know, I can remember having like 2 years clean and getting this job. And by then I'd worked some steps and stuff, and it was a job where I was working in a retail environment, and there was a lot of cash there. At the end of the day, we would close out the cash register, and there would be at least $1,500 or $2,000, and it was me and another guy who was in the program who had a couple more years. And, you know, when I first got the job, I figured, oh, maybe I can take, like, $20 a day, but I didn't. I didn't act on those feelings, you know, and then, like, 3 months into the job, he was sick, and so I had to close the store all by myself. And I remember, like, counting out, like, $1,700 and, you know, having this impulse, well, let me just steal 100 of it, and I can, like, change a cash register receipt, and they're never going to catch me. And, you know, that was my first impulse, and I didn't act on it. And I actually put the whole, you know, $1,700 in the envelope and wrote on it. And, you know, I left there with this great feeling, you know. And here's a person that, you know, I looked at me when I was using, like, here's this idiot. He just, like, didn't steal anything, you know. But I had changed, you know, and I was completely honest, and I actually felt good about being honest. And that wasn't something that I had planned. You know, I would have rather been able to, like, you know, still cheat and scam and lie, because I thought, boy, what, everybody else is clean and I'm clean, and so I'll probably even be better at it, you know. And you know, it didn't happen. So, you know, changes like that happened to me, even though I didn't necessarily want them, and I didn't necessarily plan for them. And if you had asked me, they would have never happened if you had asked me when I was 30 days clean, you know. So, you know, this program has been an amazing event for me. I've been celebrating 14 years clean, taking cakes, you know, my life continues to improve. Sometimes there are ups and downs, like all of our lives, but my ability to deal with whatever life puts my way continues to improve, too. That's one of the miracles of this program. Having good friends in this room is a miracle of the program. You know, even if you're convinced, like I was, that this program won't work for you, that you're different than, that your feelings are more intense, that, you know, it just won't work. You know, that's the way I felt 14 and a half years ago when I started out here, and I'm a living testament that, you know, that's a lie, and that even if you're miserable, that can change too. And thank you for letting me share.